Nice Games Club is on break for the next few weeks, so your nice host can take time to wrap up work on Widget Satchel, coming to PC, Xbox One, PS4, and Nintendo Switch in 2019. In the meantime, we picked out a few of our favorite episodes from the first 2 years in the clubhouse. This is episode 10, Try It Once, Watching Games, Narrative in Games, and Board Games. I picked this episode because we each go over topics of things we dislike or know nothing about, except for Martha, because she actually likes board games, and I think we discovered that during the episode. Lots of discussion, lots of debate, fun episode overall. Be nice and have a listen.
It's our 10th episode.
Dang, man, 10 of these things?
We've gone beyond the bounds of a single digit.
Yeah, jeez.
It's incredible.
That is a lot.
We can't count them on our hands after this.
Right. For our 10th episode, we've been sort of toying with this idea. We're doing a theme show where each of our topics kind of revolve around a concept. So you out there listening, if you like this idea, if you want to give us some overarching themes, we'd love it because we have a lot of fun when our topics interrelate.
Yeah.
And this one, what's this big theme today?
Things we dislike about games.
No, weird for the Nice Games Club.
Yeah, it is.
We're trying to bring us all around to this stuff because each of us have picked something that we're not excited about or doesn't really move us in gaming culture, where the other two can sort of teach and inform and convince, perhaps. So yeah. We'll see if we make any headway on that. So let's get started with mine. Mine is Let's Plays. It's sort of games as spectator sport. I just feel so old. I'm old enough to remember when people played games. Like
back in the day.
I know. Or it's like they only went on YouTube to find out how to get the key. Like, I don't know. I'm overstating my opinion here, but it is really fascinating, especially with younger people, like how exciting it is just to watch a game, and how I've heard from a lot of people who are not that much younger than me who say like, oh yeah, I was interested in that game, but I just watched it and got all I really needed out of it. And I guess that makes some sense, but it's not an instinct I have.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose. Yeah. I mean, it relates to esports as well, which I sort of understand a little better the appeal of, but I don't know.
Esports!
Help me out, guys. Like, what am I missing?
Well, I actually don't watch too many Let's Plays myself,
mm-hmm.
But I love watching esports. Well,
okay.
I should say, I shouldn't really separate esports from fighting games, but a lot of times the community does. but I like watching fighting games specifically. Mm-hmm. I love Evo.
Mm-hmm.
Just those kind of games and the enthusiasm and the intensity of the competition.
Right.
It's really fun to watch. So that's the kind of aspect. It's kind of like watching sports to me.
Right, right.
Yes.
And so that I can get into right away.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not feel that thrill from esports?
I hate sports culture.
Okay.
I guess. And so esports to me feels sports culture, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I don't care. And we talked about this in our mastery episode, which is just like the idea of being the best is something that you want to do, but also you want to watch someone do.
Yeah.
I don't care about either of those things. So, you know, Evo is entertaining. I've told you about this, that like, I'm not a fighting game person, but like there's something interesting about it. So I'm not immune to its charms, I suppose. I think, but that kind of idea that it's spectator sport as actually a match you're watching, mm-hmm. like I cannot deny the appeal of that.
No.
And it applies to games. I think the bigger problem I have is with, people who will, watch somebody else play like a single player game for 6 hours or like in, you know, part one, part two, part three, four, or whatever, like instead of like binge watching something on Netflix, I guess. I'm not criticizing people for the use of their time. I just seem like I don't know. Is there enough of that? I just don't get it. I'm just way too old.
So you're not really into Giant Bombs like Unprofessional Fridays or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. So that's funny too, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I follow a lot of gaming press, and many of them do similar things. The Kotaku will do sometimes play alongs and stuff like that. And none of those hook me at all. And so I thought it was a little bit about like who's doing it, but I think it might just be more about it. I don't know. I don't know. There's a whole cadre of personalities of Let's Players who have followings and who themselves are entertaining on their own. And so I understand that. I'm just not familiar like with any of that sort of subculture.
I really like watching both esports and Let's Plays.
Okay.
Esports is, I find it similar to sports culture also.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the way that I finally have understood like my relatives who like watching football.
Because
it was like, oh, the way I feel about some of these teams when I get really into watching League of Legends or whatever we're watching, like that feeling is like, oh yes, I understand. Like, I want them to win so badly. And you follow along with like their personal narratives of like how the players are growing over time. And like, I don't know, it just becomes this sort of like, I understand sports fans.
Right.
Now.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. I really like watching like Achievement Hunter. They're fun because they do a lot of Minecraft videos, but instead of just building things or something, they usually make games or challenges for themselves within the game. So like they had one where they have lots of ones where you have to, they have to go find items that another player has hidden all throughout the world. They did one where the whole world was, they built a whole like cave around an area, so the whole place was dark, and it was their Halloween episode, and they had one, they had to go find all of these items before the ghoul came and got them. And the ghoul was another player who could just follow them around and whack them whenever.
So this just sounds like a game show.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that.
It kind of reminded me of Mythbusters specifically, though. Like, I think there's a, I think there's some kind of a Mythbusters-y Let's Plays thing where like you just kind of, someone gives you a myth in video games, and you have to go and figure it out.
Ah, okay, sure, sure.
Does that,
you know,
kind of exciting?
Those types of things, that is, I mean, that is more original programming in a sense. That requires the sort of creative mind of a you know, of a segment producer or whatever. And like, yeah, I'm 100% on board for that stuff. I'm I'm as not as familiar with it either, but like that all sounds totally cool.
Okay,
like, yeah,
maybe you don't dislike Let's Plays as much as you thought.
Perhaps it, and that might just a lot of it just be unfamiliarity. Like I'm not ensconced in it, you know. I mean, there's so many things in life where you don't know it until you're like well into it.
Yeah,
you know, you have to force yourself, and then suddenly you're like, "Why did I have to force myself?"
Yeah,
maybe that's it.
Maybe
I don't know.
I mean, I know there are just traditional Let's Plays too, where people just play a game and commentate on what they're playing.
It might be that there's not a, for someone who is say new to this as an idea, there's not a place for me to go, like an authority that says like what types there are, what categorizes them, what's not just what's popular, but like what's well reviewed, that, you know what I mean? And part of it is because a lot of them are done by people who review video games. And so there's no, there's not a lot of culture of reviewing that as its own artistic material, perhaps. That might be part of it. Cause I'm a believer in like media authority if it's earned. And I think that there's not any of that in this area, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah, shoot.
So I start making a list.
Somewhere. Yeah, a curation list of Let's Players.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. I wonder if we find any, or if any of our listeners know of any good lists of, or curated.
It could just be that we're unaware, and that's probably a lot of the these sorts of things. So yeah, listeners, you know, tweet at us. Let us know what we don't know.
Oh, yeah.
When you were talking about Let's Plays that are just playing through the game.
Yeah.
One that I really like, Giant Bomb does a lot of those sort of Let's Plays just to review the game, or I mentioned Unprofessional Fridays, which is their Friday show where they have whoever is on picks a couple games for them to play and show off. And one day they picked this game called, it's amazing, it's an amazing game. It's called Contradiction Spot the Liar.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's a, like, shot real people, like, video of real people, and then a narrative game within that. So, like, you click an option, and then your character that you're playing says, like, there's a video clip of them saying what you're saying, and then what the person responds.
Oh, okay.
And it's hilarious, and the acting is so campy. And they started playing it and thinking they were just going to do like one little spot on it, and then it ended up playing the whole game because it was so. And while they were playing, like they streamed it as well as like doing the video, and people, like one of the actors who was in it, actually started talking to them on
really?
The chat.
Oh, that's
cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, it's an interesting category of game where a lot of the playing it, and a lot of the enjoyment you get as a player is you just watching something that's just performative, it's narrative. And so that would just naturally make sense for to then watch somebody do that, because the agency is not the most important part of it, as you know. Like Her Story is another example where like it's sort of puzzly, but if I watch somebody a play through her story, and I could at least hear them try to figure out what to search next in the video database, if you're familiar with that game. I could see that it being almost as good as playing it myself, I suppose. So it's a type of game that works for that, perhaps.
I guess there's a kind of controversy about Let's Plays and that sort of game because people don't, I haven't bought it, that game, and I should go buy that game.
Right. I can see that glint of mischief in your eye.
Yeah. I've been meaning to just buy it one day, even though I know the ending, and so therefore it's, and so I think with that Dragon Cancer, there was controversy about whether Let's Plays should happen for narrative games.
Where's that line drawn? This was this was the subject of a co-op talk many months ago.
Yes, it was.
It's all rushing back to me now. It's a fascinating topic for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I kind of consider Let's Plays to be sort of like if you're just sitting on your couch and somebody else is just playing a game, you're just watching them play it.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that. I think that that's a lot of the appeal for people. It's like they just like that person and they like how they play a game, so they like watching them play a game.
Right. I Let's Played my wife playing Heavy Rain.
I
don't need to play Heavy Rain now. That was plenty good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those are kind of fun to just have, to just watch somebody play games that you enjoy playing games, or you enjoy watching play games.
Yeah.
I like to watch, or it's kind of a family thing. We and my family watched my brother play through Uncharted 4 a few months back.
Oh, nice.
And we just sat here and watched him.
Oh, that's a really good one because there's a lot of cutscenes, but also there's a fair amount of like tension and drama in the sort of sneak arounds in that game that if you've got the patience for, would be really fun to watch.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting topic because I don't actually like Uncharted games.
Ah.
Because of their narratives. So we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah. Hold back.
Okay.
My family did that with Myst, all the Myst games. I guess we didn't watch one person play it, but we all played it together and took turns who was driving, quote unquote. So that's really fun to play games with each other. That's sort of Let's Play idea.
Well, maybe the sort of YouTube Let's Plays that I feel so alienated from, it's just an extension or an attempt to get what I'm recognizing as a universal value to gaming culture, which is just to be with others socially, whether you're playing or not. Mm-hmm. And maybe because I'm old or maybe because I haven't seen enough of them, I don't understand how close to it they are actually getting. And maybe they're getting pretty close because it seems like it's probably motivated by a lot of the same things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, maybe I'm convinced. Maybe that's it, guys.
Try it once.
I've tried it once, Steven.
Try it again.
Okay. Two times? Two times?
Two times.
All right. All right. Well, I think that's it for me. We'll move on to Steven's topic, which he premiered for us. We'll get to it right in a moment.
All right.
Ready, Steven?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Give us your grievances.
So, narrative in video games, you know, the stories, the things that people talk about.
Uh-huh. The yakety yaks.
The yakety yak. You know, the dialogue and the text and all of that stuff. You got to sit there and read it. Everybody talks about it all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm not too interested in narratives in video games.
Right.
A lot of it specifically for me is just because they oftentimes feel divorced from the actual gameplay. And if I wanted to have a story that was divorced from gameplay, I would have watched a movie or read a book.
Uh-huh.
So that's my feeling on it. But yeah, I know you two feel differently.
Yeah, I feel really differently. And we've had conversations around this.
Yeah.
And I certainly respect your, the way you position it. Because it's like, you don't hate it. It just doesn't appeal to you.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Some stories are interesting, but they're so different from what you're actually doing in the game that I don't care.
Yeah. And maybe you just have really high standards. And I admire that, actually. Because I do, too. I think a story in games has to be supported by the mechanics for it to be considered great.
Right.
It can be considered good, and each part can be considered great, but they need to be part of a whole for it to be great. And so I when you say that phrase ludonarrative dissonance, become hated, I suppose.
I just don't like the term because it makes it sound more complicated than it. It makes it sound more academic than it feels.
That's a good objection to that. But that, I think, is something that way too many games get away with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fact of the industry, and it kind of shouldn't be.
Yes.
People don't try hard enough.
Yes. I don't know if everybody here knows about ludonarrative dissonance.
Yes.
Our listeners.
Let's, Can you explain?
Yes.
The narrative dissonance is when you have the narrative of a game. I don't know. You're a guy who can shoot tons of bullets.
Well, Uncharted's a good example.
Yes, Uncharted is a wonderful example. I love bringing that up. So you're a guy who shoots a ton of bullets at enemies, and enemies shoot a ton of bullets at you, but none of you die until you take like 100 bullets. But then in the story or the cutscenes or the text or whatever, you get hit once from one bullet and you're immediately wounded and you can't walk or something. That's the story. The gameplay is divorced from the story. There's a disconnect between the two.
That example is really telling, Stephen, because you're talking about the mechanics being disruptive.
Yes.
Because you're saying that I get shot a lot, but no big deal. But here I get shot once. And that's a mechanic of the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think of it, the example I use is you murder 800 guys in the adventure. And then in the cutscene, you grouse about like, oh, I just can't kill the mini boss. I have morals, like, you know, which is that's about the story. That's so fascinating that that's the example you go to. It's
That's
fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I focus more on the mechanics of the game. So
But that is also a big disconnect for sure. Right.
Yes. So I would like some examples from you two on what narrative you felt was amazing and convince me on it, if you can. It's a tough sell.
I've got one, Martha, but it takes some wind up.
Oh,
okay.
I've talked to you about it before, but I think Batman Arkham Knight.
Oh, okay.
Which
I've played that.
Is itself a pretty good game, but there's a moment in it where it achieves utter greatness. Mm. And I've probably told this to a lot of people, but it's my go-to for this working perfectly, especially in a AAA game. Whereas, and this is spoilers, I'm sorry, listeners, but it's been a while and it's worth the knowledge. Mm-hmm. So as Batman, you're infected with a disease at the end of the second game, you get infected with some nonsense.
Yeah.
And then that causes you to hallucinate the Joker in the third game. So he kind of follows you as your devil on your shoulder for a lot of the game. You can't be certain what you see. There's some, yada, yada. That's a great mechanic. There's a part in the game where you're succumbing to it, but you're Batman. You're the only one who can save the city. So you have to make a choice. You have to say, well, listen, I will lock myself up and let Robin take care of this urgent need, which is that's really the right thing to do, guys. I am Batman, but like, I can't trust myself.
Yeah.
It's just not going to, I've got to let, so I walk into the cell that I've designed for myself, lock myself up. And Robin's like, you've done the right thing. And then you just sit there as the player. You just sit in this little thing and walk around for a little while. And you're like, wait, what? Is there a cutscene? What's happening next? And then the Joker walks by out of the cell. This is a hallucination, and explains to you that, like, no, Batman, that's not right. And there's a bit of a story reveal there. I won't go all the way into it. But then he opens the cell for you, which makes no sense because he's not real. And then you walk out of the cell and you turn around, and then there's Robin again. And Robin's like, come on, Bruce, you got to get in this cell. It's for your own good. And you're like, wait, what's the illusion here? Like, what am I? Am I dreaming now? Was I dreaming then? What's going on? And that's great storytelling. And you go back into the cell, right? And you can do this over and over and over again. The Joker will let you out. Robin tells you to go back in.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing you can do is punch Robin in the face and throw him in the cell. It's the only other mechanic thing you can do. So at some point, you'd either do it the second time if you're bored, or the millionth time if you're trying to see where all the story goes. You finally punch Robin and send him in, and then you just walk out and continue the game. Mm-hmm. And so what actually happened is that the Joker has convinced you, the player, to make the wrong moral choice.
Yeah.
And in a way that is very linear. There's no actual choice here. And it's not even a false choice, because you never made a choice as a player. You went into the cell when the game told you should, and you punched Robin, the game told you should. Mm-hmm. But that is an example of mechanics, like achieving perfection with narrative in a way that involves the agency of the player, in a way. And I think that, like, that's what I want to strive for in my work. And that's when you say, like, you're not interested in narrative games, I feel like you're so interested in the strength of core mechanics. And I feel like that mechanic is worthless without that story beat, without that element.
Yeah. Then you know what? That's the way when you describe it like that's actually pretty convincing.
All right.
I like it.
Okay. We're two for two on this one so far.
But I noticed that in particular, it removed most of your options.
Right.
Like Batman normally is able to, jump from 5-story buildings or whatever.
Yes,
and
it's a special sequence.
Yes.
Right.
So they removed it. So you really only had two options.
It's true.
I don't know. Most AAA games, especially, they have you can do a whole bunch of things. You can jump, you can fly, you can hit things. I don't know. Uh-huh. But that one just had the two options. Maybe that's necessary for some narratives,
right?
To just remove the amount of options you can have.
Right. Right.
I know that in visual novels, that the whole game is the story stuff. I do not like visual novels for that reason. There's just nothing other than choices. I guess that makes it kind of like pure game in a way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that like those only, you only have three choices you can make. And so a lot of people talk about how important all those choices are.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a secret. Maybe that's something you could look into. Just limit a player's choice to in order to tell the narrative better.
So is your concern that like because those special sequences are very common in AAA games.
Yeah, that's
true. They're quick time events sometimes.
Yep.
But you object to that. You prefer games that are sort of, that sort of come at you honestly and sort of stay that way all the way through?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so
I could see that.
I would definitely prefer, like, if they had Batman, he had all his options, but they convinced you to do a narrative choice like you were talking about,
yeah.
But he can still do everything he wanted.
I suppose. Yeah, I suppose the difference there is that in my instance, it's a authorial choice, that this is how the story is going to go. It is linear. You don't have a choice as a player.
Yeah.
But you still have to press the button.
Yes.
And that, I find strength, I find meaning and power in that, but perhaps you just don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's totally cool. I almost got him, Martha.
I would like to propose Portal and Portal 2.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, those are good. Those are good.
I guess those are mostly character-driven stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like what you do in the game, kind of your journey through the game is also the journey through the story, in that your choices is the story is basically someone commenting on the choices you make.
Yeah.
Like Gladys reacting to you doing things.
Yeah, that's true.
Or the other robot, which I can't remember his name. But
Wheatley.
Wheatley.
Oh, yeah, Wheatley. That's
yes.
It.
Charming, simple-minded Wheatley.
Yes. And like sometimes you waiting, like every choice you make to follow what she's telling you to do, to not follow what she's telling you to do, to just stand there, we'll get reactions from the characters around you. And I feel like that ties the mechanics to the story.
I suppose that kind of reminds me of, was it Bastion? I didn't play that much of that game because I got to a point and I was trying to get 3 stars or something and I just never did it. So I just gave up. But that game also had that commentary whenever you did anything, the narrator would talk about you, the player, as the kid. And sometimes it would be like criticism, what you're doing. Like you hit a box, you'd be like, why is he breaking boxes right now or something?
Yeah.
Which was pretty interesting. But like, and I would agree that's a interesting narrative choice, and it makes the mechanics related to the story. But
the Stanley Parable is also like
that one is all about the.
Yeah, I was going to say that's basically a visual novel.
Yeah, I mean, effectively it's a visual novel because all you can do is run or walk around. Yeah. That's another one. But I guess the narrative isn't necessarily divorced from the mechanics in both Portal and. In the Stanley Parable, but like all of those actions are kind of flavor text. They're not really related to the story. I thought you were going to bring up the companion cube,
which
is part of it.
Also that,
which is kind of cool because it's kind of actually similar to what the thing you were talking about, Mark, with Batman, in that like you have to throw the companion cube in the furnace.
Right.
Spoilers, guys. This is like 10 years old. But you have to throw the companion cube in the furnace in order to move on. But the companion cube was so useful during that level that you don't really want to do it because you have a mechanical reason to do it because he could, or the companion cube could be useful later on.
Right. Right.
But you have to do it anyways because you can't get through the level without it.
You know, that's an interesting example of one that is brought up a lot as like a strong. I thought that was pretty weak.
Yeah.
When I played that the first time, I'm like, okay, I'll throw this thing away. It told me I loved it, but I don't believe it's lied to me this whole time. What?
Yeah,
that's a fair point.
It's interesting. I think because it's cute, and I think its strength came from what the fan base brought to it, which is genuine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was a little. But you know, it's interesting. Like even in Portal. You are escaping a facility.
Yeah.
But mechanically, you're just going from room to room.
Right.
What if you imagine you were entering the facility to destroy GLaDOS? Mm-hmm. That would play differently with the same mechanics. I think Portal is an excellent example throughout. I mean, the Companion Cube might even be the sort of surface level version of how it does tie the mechanics to it in a way that is not deliberate. It's very passive and backgrounded, but is really the strength of how engaging and intense that game is that you start out in this sort of cell rather than starting out at the castle gates.
Like, yeah.
That's a big deal, right?
Yeah. 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 I'm still not convinced though.
Okay.
So there are some games that I've played that had narratives that I felt were related to the mechanics very well.
Okay.
One example, Brother, A Tale of Two Sons.
Mm.
And if I go into detail, I kind of have to spoil the game.
I think just the control scheme might be enough.
But then the ending. Okay. So if you haven't played it, Brother, A Tale of Two Sons, you control two brothers, one of them younger, one older. And you use one control stick for one brother and one control stick for the other. And they have action buttons, on their triggers. To do it. So you have to control them at the same time. It feels really awkward. Basically the whole game, in fact. You don't really ever get used to it. But I mean, that's fine. But because of that, one of the brothers is older, so he can pick up things and he can push stuff better than the younger brother. But the younger brother is smaller, so he can fit under cracks and things like that. And so you use those two different strengths throughout the game to get an item for your dad to save him from dying from a disease. And so you go through the whole game doing this whole time. I feel like in order to do this, I'm going to spoil things. I'm sorry.
I've not finished it, but I'm super curious.
Oh, crap. Okay. Well,
I don't know if I'll get around to it, so I'll give you permission.
Okay.
On behalf of me and all of our listeners.
You guys might want to skip a couple of minutes then if you haven't beaten it yet. But anyways, at the end, the older brother, he ends up getting killed by, I believe, some poison dart. And so he ends up dying and you bury him in this tree. And the younger brother, he finds the cure for his dad. So he gets all the way back to the starting where you started at the starting level. And he has to make it through. But there's this one part where, you get to the lake. And the younger brother can't swim, but the older brother could.
Uh-huh.
So when I was playing it, I was just sitting there going, I can't get through this. The older brother has died. What am I supposed to do? And so what I ended where I was just mashing buttons, trying to figure out what the heck to do. Eventually I mashed the older brother's action button and the younger brother like became focused and like the screen went focused on him.
Yeah.
And then he was able to swim through the lake.
That's an excellent. Yeah.
Wow.
even when you said,
yeah,
my older brother died, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
That's what the character would say.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So like, I was like, oh crap, what's going on? I like the younger brother became so. He became determined and like I became determined because I felt like I had the power from the older brother and he had the power of the older brother. Like he grew up, I guess he was just able to do the things. So, and then like you go through the beginning level doing the things you could do all the things that the older brother did as a younger brother and you ended up making it and saving your dad and burying him. So that was a powerful moment for me. That's something that I rarely experience in games. That's what I want more of.
Yeah.
And wish I could get more of that kind of stuff.
Well, you've convinced me.
Yeah.
Well, dang, shoot. I did the opposite of what I wanted. I want more of that in games. And I would like to do that one time or one day is to be able to make a game that has that kind of a powerful moment or not even just the whole game or just a powerful narrative that is completely related and married to the game mechanics in a way that video games can only provide. Mm-hmm.
I like story in AAA games. I like games that have cutscenes. Mm-hmm. But I 100% agree with you in the way you've laid it out. Is that the best way to do narrative games is that way. In fact, I would argue that it's the only way to be true to it.
Exactly.
To the form. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why I don't care much for video game narratives.
They don't meet that standard.
They generally don't.
Okay.
I mean, the narratives themselves are fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're bad. And the choices you make can have weight in the narrative, but not to the mechanics. And I need the combination.
Okay. Detente then.
Detente.
Okay. Well, let's bring it home with Martha's grievance and we'll see what we can do for her right after this.
Okay.
Okay. Lay it on us.
Don't tell anybody.
Uh-huh. Secret. Keep it between us.
but I don't like board games very much.
What?
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 I'm telling everyone, Artha. Can't believe this. What is it you don't like about board games?
Well, it's interesting because when I was a kid, I loved board games. Mm-hmm. And I think what started happening...
And a board game killed your dog.
Yes, and I've never been able to play one since. Oh. My dad made a board game back in the day. It's called Dungeon with an exclamation point. So we always had a lot of board games about, and my brother Henry didn't get a closet when he was growing up because his closet was the game closet. And so there were board games stacked to the ceiling, and you had to like make sure that you weren't going to get a whole board game pile on you.
On top of you. That sounds intense. Just to play a game.
It's pretty great. And we had so many cool games. A lot of Animal Town games. There were a bunch of cooperative games like Save the Whales. Was one of the favorites. I like this game with these squirrels and these beans. Anyway, it was really great. We had so many board games around. But then at a certain point, when I'd be going to parties when I got older in high school and in college, like board games became the thing that we did when no one could figure out anything else to do.
Oh.
And that it just, so many awkward experiences have piled themselves up on each other now that now it's like, oh, we're gotten to the point in the party where we're playing a board game.
That's when you know to leave.
Yeah.
Everyone was causing pop-o-matic trouble and nobody said sorry.
Yeah. So I'd like to hear from you guys. Okay. What board games do you like and why do you like them, and sort of bring back that magic?
Okay. Well, as game designers, part of a gaming community, we play board games like new, detailed, modern board games. Yeah. Less the classics of our childhood, which isn't to say those don't have value or aren't replayable, but like as an adult board game player, it's like a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you just haven't done that yet. Because I will say I only started playing board games again regularly fairly recently because we have an event here at Glitch, Tabletop Tuesdays. Which is twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go and play a brand new game. And I've been exposed to a lot more. And I didn't think I was really into board games either, I suppose. I don't have quite the sound reasoning that you have. But I just wasn't really part of my life. And now that it is, I was like, where was it this whole time?
Yeah, I feel the same way. Now that I think about it, I really didn't play that many board games until recently, too, because mm-hmm. of Tabletop Tuesdays. But I mean, I played like the staples that most board game enthusiasts would probably hate me for, like Monopoly, Jenga and stuff. None of the real fancy, complicated stuff, but just. But I always enjoyed, what I most enjoy about board games is that in order to play them, well, not all of them, but in order to play most board games, you have to be in a group and you have to be there in public, in person, and you have to experience that kind of a thing, like couch co-op kind of gameplay. And it's in this era where video games are getting more and more divorced from that, where you're playing them online on your own computer. Everybody's on their own computer. You can't hit somebody on the shoulder when they make something stupid.
That's the main thing you want.
Yes, that's all I want.
Multiplayer experience.
Yeah. In that kind of a time, it's nice to be able to sit down with people you enjoy being around and play a game together.
Mm-hmm.
That's something it's getting harder and harder to do with video games. And so board games provide that.
Even further than that, I think board games mechanically require cooperation amongst the players, even in a competitive game.
Yeah.
Because unless Dungeons & Dragons is perhaps the exception, mm-hmm. right? Which you are an avid player of, Martha.
Oh, yeah. I love Dungeons & Dragons.
So this is weird, but we'll square that circle in a moment. That everyone is in charge of and not just like auditing each other for cheating. And I don't mean that. I mean that like you're building this sort of like world that exists of these rules mm-hmm. together, and you're maintaining it. You're all holding up the walls.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of special in a way that like a game like Overcooked or other sort of simple couch co-op games can't give you, even if they are maybe board games on a screen, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And is that overselling it, perhaps? I think that there's something special about everyone being in charge of like pulling little tokens from a bag. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
To me, yeah, it's kind of weird to be able to, you just like, everything's physical, so touching stuff all the time and moving things.
Right.
It makes it feel more real mm-hmm. in a weird way.
Tactile.
Yeah, perhaps. Are you convinced? Are we done?
Well, I don't think we're getting off that easy.
Well, I get your point. Mm-hmm. I guess the board games that I have gotten into, because there's a few that recently that I have gotten really into, like Evolution, for example, is a game that I really like.
Yeah, I knew there was a reason this was a confusing thing that I heard from you, is that, yeah, you love that game. Okay.
And I think it has to do with, like, maybe some of the mechanics of games. Like, mm-hmm. some games you can figure out really easily, and therefore playing them again isn't really a thing.
Oh, they're like solvable in the sense that like it doesn't mean you're going to win every time. You just kind of know how it's going to go every time.
Yeah. Or on the flip side, it's random. So mm-hmm. Why bother trying? Because, you know, the dice rolls are what's determining who's winning or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so then if there isn't enough like social, like awesome around it, then it's like, why are we even doing this?
Yes, yes.
I can understand.
Well, that leans right into the other reason I love board games, is that like you spend most of your time not playing the game. And I know there are some people who don't like when board games go on long, but I love it because you're just hanging out with pals, right?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an aspect that's pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about back in the Nicest of 2016 episode about Star Trek Ascendancy, which is a game like that where there's huge downtime between turn order.
That game takes too long.
It takes, well, okay. Well, it takes objectively too long.
Objectively, yes.
But I don't think it takes too long. Okay. But that's a game where it is incredibly social if you let it be. Mm-hmm. And that can fill the time and a whole day, and it's super fun. And it has all the sort of like, you know, I mean, again, I guess maybe we'll try to sell it to you like a game like D&D. Like D&D is a social experience. It has rules, but it also has like narrative, and it has strategy, and it has silly moments and fun moments. And I think a lot of board games should be able to provide that to you. It's sad for you that they haven't.
Well, if we go back to my example, Evolution.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That one I really like. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason I really like it is because there's lots of strategy, and and there's a way, like many different ways to win, and figuring them out in a given play period for who you're playing with, and that like makes me go, this is really fun, and I want to play it again, and I want to beat everyone. So it kind of, I like games that hook into that competitive aspect for me, and mm-hmm. also the like high strategic thinking parts of my brain.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
So I don't know if I could do 8 hours of that.
Yeah.
But that's the sort of games that draw me in. Like Puerto Rico was another game that I really liked playing for a while. Game's kind of problematic with the theme and the piece colors choices, but it was really, really interesting to me playing it. I played it once with a group of friends at the cooperative house I used to live in, and of course everyone's kind of working together, and I was able to win consistently because I could convince other people to do things that would help them but also help me. And then I played with a bunch of people from my dad's work, and they were all extremely competitive and also wouldn't listen to me when I said things like this. So I'd be like, you should do this because it will help you, also help me, but it mostly will help you. Uh-huh. And they're like, no. They were willing to screw me over just so, even though that, and then it ended up that they also didn't win or get more points, like someone who someone else who wasn't engaging at all mm-hmm. won. And so it was so interesting that like the strategy that I thought was going to win me every time did not work because of the group of people I was in. Right, so that was an interesting study for me about, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
You should play Star Trek Ascendancy. It's got that kind of aspect.
It does. It does. It's very rigidly mechanical, but there's just enough wiggle room for influence and barter mm-hmm. and like and sort of strategic psychology that I think you'd be into.
There's literally a trade agreement mechanic in the game.
Ooh.
Right. It adds a lot to it.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the social aspect that you enjoy from it, but like the strategy that you enjoy.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Well, in that it sounds like, because the way you describe it, like it's probably a lot harder. I mean, not harder. It's less common for video games to do that.
Multiplayer?
Yeah, because they tend to be more tactical than strategic.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, because you can't really have a mechanic. Well, there's a little bit where like everybody has to slap the board really fast. But otherwise, there's not really much of mechanical speed tests.
Right, right. Which I hate in board games when you have to engage with them physically. Like, yeah. No. But, you know, in video games, that's the strength of video games mm-hmm. is twitch action, even in a game that's not, you know, fast.
Yeah.
So it makes sense there wouldn't be a lot of, well, Civilization might be the exception. That's basically a board game.
That's true.
It's terribly complicated. You couldn't do it on a table.
I do like playing multiplayer Civ, so.
Okay, yeah. You know, it's when you talk about the different types of players and how that really changes experience, I think that's probably I would imagine there's tons of stories of people who are like, oh, I have my regular group. Then I went to some other group and like none of the games I like were fun anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that has a really big thing to do with the situation and who, like the different motivation types of people mm-hmm. that you have in playing the game.
Yeah. There's probably a lot you don't imagine about viable strategies because they wouldn't work on the people you play with. And you just assume that it wouldn't work on anybody.
Yeah.
Because you assume everybody is a rational actor and knows all the strategies. That reason is one of the reasons I really love co-op board games. So like Pandemic is a good one.
Oh, yeah.
There's one we played at Tabletop that I forget the name of, but it's where you're firefighters and you have to...
Flashpoint?
Yeah,
Flashpoint?
I think so.
Yeah.
That game was fun. Like, so I don't know. We'll get you to play some of those perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely down for playing more cooperative games. Yeah. That'd be really fun.
Those are my favorite board games. Mm. As much as Star Trek Ascendancy is my favorite board game now, like in general, co-op board games, I love. There aren't enough of them.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's something that's missing.
I'll bring in Save the Whales sometime.
Hey, there we go. I think we've convinced her.
You think so? We've made headway at least.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get you to play some good ones.
Okay.
That's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app, and be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or are nice like us. It's real important for new shows like ours to get noticed, so spread the word. Help us make this bigger and better. We also want to hear directly from you, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club. Let us know how we're doing, send us your topics, ask us your questions. Lastly, you can find more about the show and your nice hosts, as well as all the links and notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. So, until we start again, remember to...
Play nice
and make nice.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.